Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the February 2021 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is Made in North Carolina, our annual awards issue for North Carolina's top makers in craft, style, food, drink, and home and garden. Let's see how many of those we can get covered today. Made in NC. Each year, North Carolina's Our State magazine celebrates North Carolina's talented artisans with the Made in NC Awards. In 2020, top honors went to a potter in Weaverville, a meadery in Durham, cheesemakers in Climax, a cutler in Leland, and a mom-and-pop sneaker manufacturer in Asheville. Now it's time for you to meet North Carolina's award winners and honorable mentions. Two very large pieces of pottery here, so I can tell what we're going to be doing first. These are very unusual. They're both purple with some rust color mixed into them in a pattern. It says, Tori Mottle throws her large format pots, including her award-winning 28-inch floor vessel, in sections, then stacks them. In the kiln, the wild Blue Ridge clay blooms with rich, earthy colors. And indeed it does. This is the craft and overall winner, Mottle Pottery, that's M-O-T-Y-L, in Weaverville. She digs wild clay. Oh, catchy little title there. Most people don't think about the soil they walk on, but Tori Mottle knows its potential. In her hands, Western North Carolina clay becomes a stunning expression of place, written by C.A. Carlson. Ceramic artist Tori Mottle is beginning a new piece, not at the potter's wheel in her Weaverville studio, but on the grassy banks of nearby Reams Creek. Wearing a bright pink stocking cap over her spiky brown hair, holding a lavender polka-dotted pillowcase in one hand and a long-handled shovel in the other, Mottle squats down at a half-bare patch of earth, scrabbles up a handful of dirt streaked with red, and sniffs it. Instead of the multi-vegetal odor, that might make for a good garden, the scent is clean, mineral. Delighted, Mottle starts to dig. The clay she turns up just below the surface has made Western North Carolina a center of pottery production for centuries, from the traditions of Cherokee makers to the efforts of European settlers and their descendants, who clawed a livelihood out of the region's difficult soil. Clay, a specific kind of earth, rich with fine mineral particles that becomes yielding and moldable when combined with water, results from millennia-long weathering of rocky landscapes like the Blue Ridge Mountains. With clay free for the digging, at least five potteries flourished in this community just north of Asheville through the 19th and early 20th centuries. As the ceramics industry shifted toward mass production, however, commercial clay, cleansed of grit, blended and homogenized for quantities that make, or rather qualities that make it easier to throw, become widely available. Since then, fewer and fewer potters have embraced the ancient challenge that Mottle has set for herself in her very modern work. When you work with commercial clay, you can start with an idea of what you want to make, Model says. When you work with wild clay, clay that hasn't been heavily processed, clay that's close to what it is when it comes out of the ground, you have to understand its properties, figure out what you can do to show off the material itself. You start with the clay, not with the idea. Model has been digging wild clay for a little more than 2 years, both in her native upstate New York, another traditional pottery region, and on the Burnsville property where she and her husband settled in 2016. Her interest in wild clay coincided with a challenge she set for herself to throw 100 large format pots and converge in the 28-inch tall vessel, deep, iron, black, and rusty red, tall and textured, that earned her top honors in our state's 2020 Made in America, or, pardon me, that's just an expression that just rolls right out, Made in North Carolina Awards. I remember thinking the first time I saw it, I wish I'd made that, says Sarah Wells Roland, a fellow ceramic artist and an owner of Asheville's Village Potters Clay Center, where Model teaches and has apprenticed. From her 35 years of experience in the medium, Wells Roland understands how hard it is to pull off a piece like that that earned Model the award. Whether it's heterogeneous, sometimes gritty texture, and lack of natural elasticity, wild clay is inherently short, crumbly as in shortbread. It's even more challenging to turn into large format pieces than commercial clay. The structure has to be thrown carefully. Model makes her large pots in stacked sections. A big pot will always tell on you, exposing any weakness in the potter's abilities, Wells Roland says, and that's especially true when the artist is working with unpredictable wild clay. It's even more challenging to turn into large format pieces than commercial clay. The structure has to be thrown carefully. It sounds like I'm reading the same paragraph twice. I apologize. I looked away and look what happened. The success of Model's piece reflects her skill, but it's also a product of serendipity. That pot received an incredible blessing in the firing, Wells Roland says. When pockets of low oxygen in the kiln encounter minerals in the wild clay, the colors deepened, changed, bloomed rusty red in just the right spot and just the right way to accentuate the form of the vessel. Model uses slip, a loose pudding-like mixture of clay and water, to create surface texture on much of her work, and she eschews commercial glazes on her pieces made from wild clay. Instead, she lets the composition of the clay itself come through. The high iron content of one batch led to an almost melted effect when the pots came out of the kiln. It wasn't what Model expected, but she accepts it as an expression of the landscapes where she digs her clay and makes her work, almost like the concept of terroir in winemaking. Like a Bordeaux or Burgundy, Model's pots couldn't come from anywhere else. She eagerly takes on commissions from collectors who want ceramic pieces made from clay dug on their own land as a way of celebrating a beloved place. The forms of her pieces tend toward the minimal and the modern, allowing the material to speak to itself. As with many things that read as simple and authentic, though, there's vast craft at work. Model's family encouraged her to pursue her interest in art from an early age, but she prepared herself to make a living as a teacher with degrees in education. After an early focus on metalsmithing in her own work, she pursued a series of apprenticeships in the ceramic arts when she realized that she responded more strongly to pottery. It's such a ubiquitous form that has always existed for humans, says Model, who has studied archaeology. All cultures have developed it independently, and most of us still use the some form of it every day. The emotional reaction to handmade pottery is so powerful that it's even more profound when you're working with wild clay. Model is now working on a textbook about wild clay and should be leading an online class on the topic in February. While a handful of North Carolina suppliers, including Starworks Ceramics in Montgomery County, offer wild-sourced clay for sale, Modal encourages students to dig their own. As she fills her purple pillowcase with clumps of earth, she puts her shovel down for a moment to rest and look at her haul, to imagine what it might become. There's something magical in working with wild clay, she says, in being the person who takes it from the ground to the finish line. If you'd like to visit, they're in Weaverville at 181 Reams Creek Road. Motylpottery.com, MOTYLpottery.com. And now, from field to flask, drink Honey Girl Meadery in Durham. Across the seasons, Diane Currier gathers the work of bees, the blossoms, fruits, and honey. She brings them back to Honey Girl Meadery in Durham, where the bees' bounty is bottled for all to taste. When Western North Carolina's apple trees bloom in late April and early May, millions of bee visitors come to press their faces and flower hearts. In the East, fairy bell-shaped blueberry flowers blossom as early as May, calling their own millions of guests for a nectar feast. At Honey Girl Meadery in Durham, Diane Currier is as busy as the six-legged ladies she celebrates, humming around, concocting and infusing, steeping and fermenting and bottling. Currier is a mead maker, an alchemist of wildflowers and fruit, who brews honey wine. These are simple methods, she says, her small frame dwarfed by a large silver fermentation tank, simple ingredients and naturally gluten-free. The ancient Greeks referred to mead as nectar of the gods, a mellifluous dew sent from heaven. Ancient recipes call for mixing rainwater with honey and letting a month and a half of the sun's rays turn a sweet treat into something truly divine. Today, the meadery is Currier's hive, the silver tanks her honeycomb. But she only discovered mead 16 years ago without any history lesson to guide her. After a morning spent wandering through an Alaskan field of fireweed flowers with her sister, Currier was handed a glass of fireweed mead. I was just standing in those flowers, and now I'm drinking them, she says. It was a powerful experience for me. As soon as she returned to Durham, Currier decided she'd transform the fruits of her home brewing operation from beer into something sweeter. She had little to go on, no time-tested techniques to try. I was just kind of stumbling through, she said. Her first tries didn't exactly taste like the clear, golden mead she remembered from her trips. The first mead batches as a brewer, I'll call them rustic, she says. Currier kept experimenting, refining, giving herself time, feeling her way back to the ancient method of making mead without heat. Over time, her mead went from cloudy to clear, rustic to refined. Her field began to bloom in the bottle. It became crystalline, and I wanted it to be, she says. It started showing off the colors of the fruits, the flowers, the nature of it. I wanted those to be glowing in the bottle. After a few years of making mead at home, she entered a bottle of her hibiscus lemon thyme mead in the North Carolina State Fair and won a second-place ribbon. That's when I said, I can do this. People like this. Currier left her job in marketing in 2012 to open Honey Girl, the airy East Durham meadery with a bar built from stacked cheery yellow beehives. Prior to COVID-19, visitors could taste one of the 20 or so seasonal meads she had on tap or wander to the back to see where Currier and her team create the unique profile of each mead batch. Honey Girl's small kitchen looks more like a laboratory with a steel-topped table and large refrigerators. Depending on the season, containers filled with fresh blackberries, blueberries, apple cider, or figs ripened and picked in North Carolina hint of upcoming concoctions. Honey Girl works with Sawmill Bee Farm, an apiary in St. Paul's, where bees bounce across different plants each season, each year. I think it blossoms in a couple of different ways. The first is through our honey, she says. The other blossoms I think of are actual flowers. Each large batch of mead uses 1,200 pounds of the bee's deep amber honey. When a bee returns to her hive with a flower nectar, she does so with tiny bellyfuls, a few sips at a time. It takes 2 million bee visits to flowers to make 1 pound of honey, and the bees fly about 50,000 miles gathering nectar to make that pound. Courier adds floral elements to the meads by selecting flowers from local growers. Hibiscus from Maple Spring Gardens at the Durham Farmers Market. Lavender from the Baggett family Sunshine Lavender Farm in Hurdle Mills. Their culinary lavender blend is mind-blowingly delicious. Each fall, Courier drives a rented truck to Perry Low Orchards, south of Wilkesboro, where she fills a 300-gallon tote with 3,500 to 4,000 pounds of fresh-pressed cider that she combines with fall wildflower honey to create apple cider. And it does say cider, C-Y-S-E-R, not cider. Apple sweetness depends on the amount of sun each year and the special blends of the earth from which the trees grow. The cider is different each year, which I love, she says. This year, in addition to the usual bouquet of mead varieties, fermenting in silver tanks and barrels, Honey Girl is experimenting with aging some meads in bourbon barrels, while other meads will be aged in wine barrels. I'm blown away by barreling and what I can do, Courier says. We already have a fantastic, beautiful North Carolina wildflower mead. When it goes into the barrel, it is already aged 2 years, smooth and gorgeous. The things the mead picks up from the barrel, not just the oak characteristics, but whatever was in the barrel before, the mead becomes more layered and special. Every batch of handicraft and hand-bottled mead is as unique as the meadows that produced it. Hibiscus, lemon thyme, the color of a pinkish-gold sunset spreads over the tongue with the texture of a smooth wine humming along to the gentle tune of honey. The light, carbonated session mead, flower power, blooms in the mouth with hints of hibiscus, jasmine, and rose petals. Honey Girl's current mead, the color of red wine, tastes like a holiday party. You don't have to sit beneath the apple boughs in spring and summer to breathe in their delicate blossoms or to watch the eastern North Carolina blueberries bell-shaped flowers ringing with the bees. At Honey Girl, you can pour these jewels of nature in a glass and taste the nectar of the gods. Written by Eleanor Spicer Rice, Honey Girl Meadery is at Hood Street, Durham. HoneyGirlMeadery.com. And you're listening to Our State Magazine on the North Carolina Reading Service. Questions, comments, 919-781, or rather 919-832-5138. If you'd like to reach our underwriter, Carter Glass, you can reach him at 919-781-1973. And now, food, Goat Lady Dairy in Climax. A happy accident. Set on 40 acres of bucolic Randolph County farmland, Goat Dairy Lady Dairy produces top-quality cheeses for all occasions, including an award winner called Providence, written by Robert Lopez. Bobby Brad's steps into an aging room at Goat Lady Dairy and picks up a hunk of Providence cheese. Its craggy rind has been described as stone-like, but sitting on the shelves in the aging room, it looks more like blocks of cement. In Bobby's hand, the cheese glistens from a freshly applied coat of oil, revealing streaks of silver, charcoal, and caramel, and emits a mushroom scent. If you cut into one of those bricks after it's properly aged, you'll have a firm, cream-colored treat with a sharp, nutty flavor. A bit like Manchego, but earthier. Bobby, who runs Goat Lady Dairy with his wife, Carrie, sets a slice with a bit of rind around the edge on the table.
I like to cut it down the center and then cut little slivers that go from the center to the edge so you can taste the whole thing, he says. I've got some people who throw the rind away and some people who will fight you for the rind. They just love it. Me personally, I love it all. The Brazzes have been at the dairy almost since it opened in 1995, working alongside Ginny Tate, the original goat lady. A transplanted Midwesterner, she moved to North Carolina in the late 1970s and worked as a nursing administrator at Moses Cone Hospital in Greensboro. But in the mid-1980s, she was looking to get away from the hustle and bustle of the city and return to the life she had known growing up on a farm in central Illinois. As Bobby describes it, she would drive the back roads of Randolph County with two Nubian goats in the front seat of her pickup truck, looking for just the right property. What she found in 1984 was a 40-acre plot that had once been a tobacco farm. She bought the land, which sprawls along a winding, tree-shrouded two-lane road, among other family farms near the community of Gray's Chapel, just south of Climax. In the early 90s, her brother Steve and her sister-in-law Lee bought neighboring property, and the three began Goat Lady Dairy together. Early on, some neighbors couldn't remember Ginny's name, so they referred to her as the Goat Lady, which seemed a sensible name for the dairy once the family got it up and running. Bobby was hired in 1995 and helped construct the main cheesemaking facility. Carrie started as a dishwasher and began working in the cheese room the following year. In 2009, Ginny died from complications of Lou Gehrig's disease. Steve and Lee continued operating the dairy, and the Brazzes, who had mastered the art of cheesemaking over the years, bought it in 2017. Goat Lady's Providence cheese came about as a result of what Carrie calls a happy accident. The Daily Artisans that had been trying to make something similar in style to Taleggio, a semi-soft Italian cheese with a sticky rind. But we didn't have the correct humidity for that cheese, Carrie says. Back then, we didn't have the aging rooms where we can control all the parameters. We were just aging it in refrigerators. One batch didn't turn out like they wanted it to. The rind was dry, and Taleggio's style is supposed to be wet, she says. If it's not wet, the inside dries out. But we tasted it anyway, and it was really good. That was about 15 years ago. Since then, Goat Lady's Providence cheese has been a winner among customers and judges alike. The Providence making season runs from about March through September. After mid-September, the goats are getting ready to be bred, Bobby says. Their bodies are changing, and the milk is changing. If you try to make Providence out of too fatty a milk, it'll fail. At the beginning of the process, the aging rooms are sprayed with a solution containing cheese cultures to aid with maturation. The dairy produces several batches of Providence a week, molding them into square blocks weighing about 5 to 7 pounds each. After they're brined, the blocks are put in the aging room where they're flipped over every week. If you leave it sitting still, all the moisture just goes to the bottom, Bobby says. When you turn it, that allows the moisture to come back through it. Also, if you left it on one side all the time, it would pancake. At first, the cheese will have some green spots, and then gradually it develops a brownish-gray rind. At about 3 to 4 weeks, the dairy's crew will brush the blocks with oil, which preserves the rind's color and serves as a sort of sealant. Providence ages from 6 months to a year. The blocks are then cut into third-pound and half-pound chunks for retail. Providence pairs well with olives and cured meats, but Carrie and Bobby also like to use it in mac and cheese. Lately, the Brazzes have been doing good business online. Many people choose to do pickup orders where they simply drive up and retrieve their cheeses from a refrigerator outside. The dairy hasn't been hosting events during the pandemic, but visitors still look for excuses to drop by. People love the setting, Bobby says, stepping outside the building and looking toward the main house, a two-story structure painted blue with a pair of rocking chairs on the porch. At the side of the house is a garden with a playground for the couple's grandkids. The land slopes down to a wooded area, and a fine mist settles over the dairy in the morning, with flashes of orange and red leaves peeking through in the fall and colorful flowers in the spring. It's a vista that many a visitor has taken in while sitting on the porch, nibbling a slice of Goat Lady cheese. They're located on Jess Hackett Road in Climax, goatladydairy.com. Pretty wooden building here, with kind of a cupola up at the top, of quite a large one, I must say, which allows a lot of extra light to come into the building. Well, we don't have time to read the next full article, so I'm going to go back to the beginning of the magazine and cover a couple of things here. They have an interesting little to-do list for February. It says, gather, sip, eat, and celebrate what North Carolina has to offer this month. Arrange a backyard bouquet. Stacy Curtis, head floral designer at the Farmer's Wife Antiques and Flowers in Greensboro, has spent the past few decades designing bouquets that are meant to last. Follow Curtis's six steps to building a beautiful backyard arrangement that will thrive for weeks. Number one, gather fresh evergreen varieties, bare branches and blooms. In February, Curtis usually looks for little gem magnolia, sweet gum or river birch branches, and Lenten roses or forsythia blooms. Fruit tree blossoms like apple, pear, or peach can also work in a bouquet. Peel off and throw away any foliage that will be below the waterline in your vase. Leaves left underwater will rot. 3. Fill a vase with warm, nearly hot water and give your stems a clean cut before placing them inside. Warm water helps the stem cells open up quickly, and its flowers to blossom more quickly. 4. Add a clear soda like 7-Up to your vase. The acidity in the soda helps water travel through the plants faster, keeping them hydrated longer while the sugar makes them smell fresh. That is something I never would have thought about. And number 5, when arranging, create structure with greenery first before adding branches and blooming flowers. 6, to ensure longevity, place the arrangement out of direct sunlight or heat and make sure that the vase is always full of clear water. A beautiful picture here, a double spread up front called View From Here, Winter Wonder in Max Patch. The Blue Ridge Mountains never look quite as blue as they do when covered in snow. On top of Max Patch Mountain, a 350-acre bald cleared for pasture land in the 1800s, you can see a 360-degree view of the surrounding landscape. Looking west into Tennessee, the range is as blue as the sky, and that's what we're looking at. Blue mountains against a blue sky with a lot of white clouds streaked in there, too. In the foreground is one of those cleared fields they talked about as it goes into the snow-covered evergreen trees, and two people are walking across the field. Well, that is about all the time we have for this week's episode of Our State Magazine, and I do hope that you enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, or on iTunes. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.